Welcome to another episode of Dr. MC's Self-Care Cabaret Podcast. I'm Teresa Melito Connors, a PhD-level self-care expert in the greater Boston area with a passion for helping others recognize the importance of caring for themselves. Today's conversation is with my friend, mentor, and colleague, Dr. Mitch Ablett. Mitch is a clinical psychologist, author, consultant, and international speaker. I first crossed paths with Mitch about 10 years ago when I began working in special education, as he was the clinical director of the Manville School at the Judge Baker Children's Center in Boston, a Harvard Medical School-affiliated therapeutic school program for children and adolescents with emotional, behavioral, and learning difficulties. Mitch also served as a member of my doctoral committee, and it was an honor to have him as part of that process with me. And I have had the pleasure over the years of attending many workshops with Mitch that have always been wonderful learning experiences. His latest book for parents, educators, and other helping professionals, titled Prizeworthy, How to Meaningfully Connect, Build Character, and Unlock the Potential of Every Child, is now available to purchase, and it is a fantastic read. I am thrilled to learn more about this latest book and welcome Mitch to the podcast today. Thank you, Mitch, so much for joining me today on the Dr. MC Self-Care Cabaret Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I'm delighted to ask you a few questions, and we're going to jump right in because I know you have so much experience in the self-care arena as a clinical psychologist and, of course, your mindfulness work. But I'm wondering how you like to practice self-care.
Oh, good one. Right off the bat. It's been an evolving process over the years. I actually have tried to move away just for myself from the concept of self-care, because it was so caught up in baggage for me around all the stops and starts and failure experiences and the shoulds and the should nots and all of that stuff. You know, so I have how I integrate things for myself.
Okay.
What I would call it. So, and I've gotten way more consistent using that kind of frame versus like, oh, I got to do the self-care stuff, which always felt like it should. So, you know, I would say that particularly over the past year, I've gotten pretty consistent around, like, I need to every day, and I don't do cray cray stuff like I used to feel like I had to around like exercise, you know.
Sure.
I view it as exercise now. It's I do my martial arts stuff, and you know, this is audio, so I'll turn my camera. You can see my heavy bag right over there.
Ooh, that's fun.
And if I turned it far enough, which will pull out the cords, you'll see my little I have a portrait of Bruce Lee on the wall. So when
nice.
I'm working out, I view it, it's like a primary way that I practice mindfulness. So, you know, because I don't sit formally as much as I used to. You know, I'd say a couple times a week I'll sit formally, you know, meditation, but I will kind of drop in to my martial arts practice, mindfulness, integrate stuff zone. And I've been pretty consistent here for about a year where it's like every day, you know, half hour, 45 minutes, you know, and I have some people online that I like their way of teaching stuff. And so I'll like have that in the background and I'll either follow along with them or do my own stuff. And that really is important to me. You know, like it really is meditative and it's cardio, it's strength, you know, all that stuff. But it's way more than the exercise. It's like I feel like I've lit something in myself.
Nice.
And I don't always do it first thing in the morning. It can be like today it was, you know, like noontime. So, you know, that's a key thing in the integration zone. you know, I feel like it's super important that I hydrate the crud out of myself. You know, I was not
absolutely
I was not doing that for years and years, and
it makes a big difference in how you feel.
It's I mean, everyone talks about it. It's kind of like a, you know, like a fad thing, but it's a real thing. You know, it's not anything like some, you know, synthetic supplement thing that somebody made up. It's water. And I think I have it. Oh, it's over there on the other. I have a gallon thing that I.
Oh, you walk around with a big gallon jug?
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
And there's something about it being a big honking gallon jug. I mean, it's actually, it has like the little, it's got little motivational stuff on the side.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
And, you know, I don't really, you know, that's kind of whatever, but there's something about it being heavy and that, and I think this is important. It requires a degree of intention to fill it up, have it in the fridge every night, get it out in the morning, carry it around and feel the weight of it. And it's this big honking reminder that, you know, I'm showing up to something that is my choice. And then, you know, I'm constantly, as you know, in my creative projects, you know, and I, you know, my own podcast is one of them, the, you know, the writing I do, the speaking, you know, the online course stuff that I'm about to put out there, you know, that is very integrative for me to sit and be like, all right, there's a new way of doing this or a new way of kind of stitching this together. And I'll, you know, come up with an acronym or a way to integrate mindfulness practices or a new way to teach it or whatever. And that does something integrative for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. And yeah. As you were talking about Bruce Lee, I actually had a memory of being in one of your workshops and you shared a Bruce Lee quote, and I may butcher it, but it was something along the lines of, I fear not the man who learns 10,000 different kicks. I fear the man who practices one kick 10,000 times or something. And like that really stuck with me and is quite a powerful, powerful quote. So I'm glad that Bruce Lee's there encouraging you.
Yeah. The quote on the wall over here next to it. And it's a picture of him or like a litho looking thing from his best movie, in my opinion, Enter the Dragon, after he's, you know, fighting the boss guy at the end and he's gotten scratched up and whatnot. And the quote is, you know, only the doer learns, which nice. I like that. But when I'm punching and stuff or kicking, I'm often aiming at Bruce.
Uh-oh.
not out of aggression, like he's my indirect guru and I'm showing him.
That's awesome.
Showing him my stuff.
Yeah, and I recently have been paying attention. I think I was letting my hydration slip a little and I've started seeing an acupuncturist and she noted that I was dehydrated. And of course, I then, you know, jump right into gear to fix this. But so I've been a little more intentional, just paying attention to how I'm feeling. Yeah. And it makes a huge, and I knew this, like I know this, but I'm actually like living it right now and really feeling the difference over the past few weeks of just more intentional about my water intake. And I've been tempted to get one of those motivational, one of those big honking jugs, as you described. Jug.
Yeah, I don't know what the science says. I know there's science that talks about hydration, but it, you know, for me personally, headaches decrease
significantly,
and recovery from working out. Like I just turned 50 this past Sunday. And if you are not, you know, if I don't hydrate like that, I think it then begins a cascade that I start to get sore, you know, I'm more likely to pull something. Sure. Which was the case before. I ended up having surgery on my right elbow for tendonitis years ago because I was trying to do crazy DVD yoga stuff.
Oh, goodness. We don't need to do any exercise into the extreme.
Well, I was doing a big, like, oh, I can do this. I'll keep up with the 20-year-olds who are all yoga instructors.
They're right.
Teacher and all the students. And I basically jacked myself up and was, you know, massive tendonitis and, you know, both elbows and whatnot. So, you know, that's, you know, back then I'm like, I'm doing my self-care. You know, I think it's now like, you know, am I really paying attention when I'm doing what I'm doing?
Right. And that's key.
Yes.
Awesome. Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you.
So what we're mostly going to spend our time talking about today is your new book, Prizeworthy, yes. Which I'm very excited to learn more about. I have read parts of it so far. And so you want to tell me a little bit about the book?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the closest thing to like magnum opus material for me, where, and by that I mean like, this is the stuff I've been thinking about and teaching for a long time. This distinction between what, you know, most people consider praise and then what I consider to be prizing kids. You know, the book is focused in on parents and then like educators, you know, therapists that work with kids. You know, the original vision was like a much broader book about human communication and human relationships. So like, you know, adults with one another, you know, prizing versus praise and blame. Mm. But I consistently need to give shout outs to certain people in my own history. You know, the one in particular that the book is dedicated to was my mentor in graduate school, who's one of my clinical supervisors, this very cool guy named Sandy. He went by Sandy, and he was like my own personal Yoda. You know, and you know, he was just an awesome dude. And he was the first person to, or the only person to give me that term. And, you know, I think the way he said it was, it's important, Mitch, to not praise your clients as a therapist. It's important to prize them. And that just like, it like, boom, like lightning bolt for me back then. And this is long before I was a meditator and into all the mindfulness stuff, which back then I scoffed at as like unscientific, you know, new age Buddhist hooey, you know, John Kabat-Zinn, wherever you go, there you are, was out while I was in grad school. I'm like, what the hell is this? You know, this doesn't make any sense.
Surprise, here you are.
Right. And, you know, Sandy, and yet I was drawn to that term. And I was, as a, you know, therapist in training, I was, you know, like moth to flame around, you know, process intervention versus content of intervention with patients, like the here and now of therapy. I studied with a major professor in my research for my master's, and a little bit with my dissertation was on therapeutic alliance, the importance of the relationship.
Right.
And so, you know, I you know, it's like all these things kind of came together over years. And then when I started, you know, while I was still in grad school working with teens and really acute stuff that you've heard me talk about before, like working in a boys' prison and then residential work when I got up to the Boston area, working at the therapeutic school for 11 years as the clinical director, then prizing, and over those years, prizing became like the sum total of my treatment plan. Like, if I can show up to this with kids, that's what they need. And so it's this, you know, it's become my viewfinder, my glasses, my perspective, working with kids, working with adults, any patient of mine, and just, you know, interacting with people. You know, people really need to be seen. And not in a superficial way, but like in a deep way. So prizing is distinct from praise. You know, praise is, you know, particularly the way it's taught to like parents around like coaching intervention kind of stuff. You know, lots of research evidence to support it. I'm not saying it's like inherently bad, but most praise is conditional. You know, oh, you did that good behavior, or you made that good outcome happen in the world. Now I'm praising you. Good job. Do more of that. So there's a contingency aspect. It can be effective in terms of the kid will do more of that behavior. So, but then there are all kinds of downsides. And this is, you know, I talk about this a bit in the book, and there's endless resources, you know, Carol Dweck's research and others, yep. Growth versus fixed mindset. This maps onto this really well, that there can be some really not good side effects to praise when it's overly conditional, like you're only going to get my engagement if you do X.
Right.
You know, that can be, you know, the research is pretty clear that if it's conditional praise, if it's whole kid praise, like you are so smart, you are, I'm emphasizing it on purpose, you are so creative, can feel good to the kid, but it sets this bar that, particularly if a kid has some anxiety issues or ADHD or learning dysfunction or whatever, and these are the kids that I've worked with for 20 plus years, they're not going to show up to creative and smart and, you know, charming or whatever in every situation. So now they feel less than.
Right.
And the research, you know, is like, well, kids that have had the whole person praise, kids that have had all the conditional praise, you know, they end up trying less hard, you know, and they end up avoiding challenge. They end up with that fixed mindset. Like, that's who I am, and I'm afraid I'm not going to bring it, and I'm going to let people down. They're not going to like me. And then they end up in my office in their 20s and 30s as a patient. Why do I suck? Sure. Why do I suck so much? So praise has some, you know, some downsides to it. And yet it's so, it's so universal in our cultural lexicon to praise like that, not just kids, but each other as adults. And prizing is not conditional. It's not outside the moment that you're in. It's completely mindfulness consistent, because it is mindfulness. It's like interpersonal mindfulness. It's, I'm here in this moment and I'm noticing what I'm noticing in myself, and I'm noticing what I'm noticing that might be the case, I could be wrong, in you, kiddo. And what I'm noticing in you matters to me.
Yeah. So can you give another example? There's tons in the book. There's actually lots of exercises and journaling and whatnot throughout the book, which I think is really cool too.
I'll give an example that's not in the book. That's a personal one. When I got my PhD, I wrote a dedication, which wasn't required for it, but I wanted to put a dedication. I dedicated it to my grandfathers. And I wrote something like, to my grandfathers, though no degree, no diploma marks your doctorates, you were my greatest professors. Aww. Something like that. But my one grandpa, they lived next door to us in Ohio when I was little. So like birth through 13, and very sweet, sensitive, caring, empathic guy, kind of soft-spoken. I was helping him haul wood that he had chopped. He's also very strong, and, you know, even in his 60s back then, he had like huge, you know, we called him Popeye. he had the look of Popeye. He had like huge, not that big, but he had like really strong looking arms and stuff. And I'm helping him haul wood that he had chopped to throw through a open window into their basement for their wood burning thing in the basement. And he had a wheelbarrow, and I was being herky jerky with it. And he reached over and latched onto my forearm. Mitchell, stop, stop, stop. Like, he really snapped at me, and it startled me at the time, but I was being ridiculous. So, you know, no big deal. I didn't really think about it. That evening, the phone rings in the kitchen, the old school rotary thing. And mom says, you know, your grandpa's on the phone. I thought she meant my other grandpa in Southern Ohio. She said, no, grandpa next door. And I get on the phone, like, hello. And he's like, Mitchell, are you okay? I'm like, what are you talking about, Grandpa? I know I raised my voice with you earlier today, and I was worried that that had really, you know, upset you. I just wanted to check, make sure you were okay. And I'm like, I'm fine, Grandpa. He's like, all right, I just wanted to check. I'll see you tomorrow. To me, you know, that's prizing in that he had this strong intention to, you know, circle back to me and check in about what I had experienced then and what I was experiencing then on the phone with him. And his agenda was not about anything, I think, other than connecting with me.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real personal example. It's not in the book of, you know, the intentionality and the agendalessness of prizing.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. So it's really becomes, you know, a bit of a shift in kind of our thinking. And I've heard you describe it also as, you know, a new paradigm for how parents and caretakers and folks who work with children can kind of do better. So how do you see that? How do you see this book kind of doing that?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I think I'll start with this. There are a lot of parenting books out there, a boatload. You can go on BNN or just go on Amazon, and there's a ton. There are even a ton of like mindfulness related parenting books.
Sure.
And my concern in adding to that, you know, shelf on the in Barnes and Noble is that, and I've experienced this as a parent, my kids are 7 and 11. You know, there's a lot of shoulds heaped on parents, like you should be doing this, you should be using this skill, you know, you really should be spending more time with them, you know, blah 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 blah. You know, there's lots of shoulds, and I didn't want to add to that. And you know, I feel like there's this paradigm out there that is still dominant around certainly blame isn't good. And there's, you know, parents that will get in the blame zone with their kids or overtly pressuring them. And just there's that praise paradigm. And there's this ongoing kind of self-esteem culture for kids. I got to bolster my kids' self-esteem. You know, every kid should get a trophy. No, not every kid should get a trophy. Because, you know, in my work, as you know, I work with kids that were they always bringing it such that they deserve the trophy for math in terms of their outcomes? No. Or, you know, does it help that kid to say, hey, you can do anything in life that you put your mind to? You can be an astronaut. You can be a physicist. I think there's a way in which when we tell kids, you can do anything, I'm going to praise you up and build up your self-esteem, they can feel the inauthenticity of that. They can feel that we're kind of sugarcoating stuff and we're not being completely honest, because particularly if we don't believe that, I think they can feel that when we don't really believe it, but we're saying it anyway. So prizing is not all rainbows and unicorns, like, you know, I'm going to boost up your self-esteem. You know, it is really about getting with the truth in the kid's experience. So instead of going for the gold of the gold medal, you're really going for tin, you know, truth in experience. And, yeah. And sometimes that's a lot of muck and yuck for the kid. Prizing is like, they're being naughty. They're being nasty. And yet you're interested, while you're going to simultaneously set a limit, you're going to have an and. I know that there's a stuckness back there, and I can't even begin to understand what it is. You're going to have to let me know when you're willing. And that is prizing, even though it's a negative behavior. I just think that when we do too much boosting kids up just to do it, we're not actually helping them in the long run.
Right. I would agree with that.
So yeah, there's a lot of how for prizing, and it starts with the adult if we're talking about prizing.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And you've mentioned this a couple of times, so I just want to clarify if some of our listeners don't know. And in my work, I talk about this too, but kind of the dangers of should, the word should, and how when we keep saying, like, you know, I should do this, I should go to the gym, I should exercise more, I should eat better, whatever it is, it makes us feel like our efforts are kind of less than, and that we're not enough and we're not worthy. Yeah. Do you have any more thoughts on kind of the dangers of should?
Yeah, I mean, it's... You know, I was talking about myself with self-care in the beginning, you know, it's, you know, around parenting in particular, there's just endless things that you, any given day, I should have been this with my kids, or I should have been this as a parent. I should have followed up on that. When does that ever help? When does that ever lead to more openness and flexibility and actual doing and actual follow through versus kind of kink stuff up and close stuff up and lead to actually less doing and less flexibility. So, you know, I think prizing isn't a should, it's just something that you can, you know, to start with, you can learn to just see that way. Right. You don't have to do anything. You can just start to be curious, what's behind my kid's behavior? You know, I think in a book, I say something like, you know, it's like being Jane Goodall with your kids without, you know, turning them into other primates, although sometimes I think that's actually boosting a kid up in a good way, you know, because they're pretty beautiful animals. But, you know, she would sit and just carefully, mindfully for hours, just observe these, you know, these chimpanzees and dial into what must it be like in their skin. And, you know, I'm not a Jane Goodall expert. I haven't written her, you know, biography or anything. And yet I have heard her speak in person. That was pretty cool.
That is cool.
You know, she has a presence about her. This, you know, gentle, thoughtful, yet courageous presence that I would consider something that happens when you keep showing up and dropping in and carefully observing and being willing to receive versus already kind of prejudging what you're looking at. So if you know, so instead of like, I need to start banging out all these hacks as a parent, how about I just start for a while, not worrying about changing anything else. I'm just going to watch my kids and just be wondering and be curious, what must it be like in their skin?
Yeah. I like that. So aside from the book, you also have an accompanying podcast that is the podcast centered around kind of the idea of prizing?
Oh, this is the brand I'm piecing together, you know that because it resonates with me, you know, whether it's going to resonate in the world, I don't know. But part of me doesn't really care that much because the podcast, I struggle with the title. I was like, am I going to just focus in on parenting? Kind of like the book is more focused on parenting. But I decided that, you know, whether the market, you know, people will tell you marketing consultant, go for your niche, you know, versus trying to go broad. But I was like, screw it. You know, so I call it the prize of possibility. And it's, you know, the nooks and crannies of the moments in daily life that can be easily missed without dropping into presence, mindfulness, compassion. So, you know, I've done a lot of parenting, you know, interviews with parenting experts, authors, which that's been really cool. But I've talked to some people outside of parenting. I did an interview recently with an author and writer, and he leads retreats, and like combining meditation with creative writing as a way to engage personal growth. And that was lovely. It had very little to do, and we didn't talk about parenting at all. So, you know, I find that process of reaching out to people, some people that I already knew, but then a lot of people I haven't met. And hey, would you like to be on my podcast? And that guy in particular, his name's Albert Flynn DeSilver. He said to me when I read the title and the little blurb about your podcast, prize of possibility resonated with me. I wanted to do it. And it's been cool. It's like what I have called in the past organic networking. It's like just you meet somebody that way and you riff with them. It's like jazz to have the conversation. It's not scripted. It's very real. And whether anybody listens to it, is less important to me than what it is doing in me. It's like an integrative practice to hang out with people.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I feel like the whole kind of concept of prizeworthy will take practice to kind of make that shift. And to, if they go through the book, there's lots of, like I mentioned, lots of journaling activities and just, but I feel like to really internalize it, it would take, it's going to take a little bit of time to practice it. So listening to the podcast could be another great way to kind of supplement the book as well, if this is something that folks are interested in. And I've had, friends of mine, I'm not a parent, but I'll see, friends on social media posting about different, situations and things that they're struggling with and always looking for great resources. So I think this can be great for anybody listening who is a parent or works with children in any way. Can definitely be helpful. And I do want to talk about, you created a card, a deck of cards. I think it's called Growing Mindful. And That's one of my favorite things. I think actually you gave me the deck of cards and I use it all the time during one of your workshops. And I tend to share different mindfulness activities. But I'm wondering if you have, what's your favorite mindfulness activity?
Oh, well, there's the formal and informal mindfulness practice. My favorite mindfulness practice is like what I just described, like true authentic prizing related dialogue, which is increasingly what I find when I doing creative teaching, speaking, the podcasting, working with some of my patients privately, or doing coaching consultation with people. That's a practice for me. And I'll say that to people, like, hey, there's a selfish side to this, because it's a remembering of what actually is every time I'm in a dialogue like that. And that's really what mindfulness practice is about, is helping you come into what is most and always and ever true, that there is this moment, and then there in this moment, there is what we're experiencing, and then there's how we're relating to that experience. And that is awareness. And any time that I'm, dropping into that truth, that's great. That's practice. And then there are the little kind of like packaged up, practices, that either I've created, or when I do like formally sit, which I do think is important. I have my way of sitting, and again, kind of like with the honking jug around hydration.
Yeah.
For me, the power of like formal sitting meditation, is the degree of intentionality. Like, I'm not going to just like sit here in this chair where I sit all day long, meeting with people. I'm going to get up and go over there where I have my little kind of, my Buddha statue under my desk, and I've got my beautifully carved seiza bench that my dad, who his main passion, other than being a mechanical engineer professionally, is carpentry. He made me a folding, beautifully done seiza bench. Cool. And so I'll sit on that, and then I drop in, and then I will, pay attention to the breath and the sensation of it. And I'll do that until that feels stable. And then I will not like a specific time. Sometimes I'll just stay with that because it doesn't, I'm just kind of all over the place. So I'll stay with the breath. If that stabilizes and the focus is very clear and there's a kind of a broadened awareness, then I'll go out to and allow myself to be aware of the, you know, the whole body, all sensation. And then if that feels stable and clear and I'm still, you know, aware of the sensation of the breath, then I'll open my eyes. And this is where it gets fun. Because in front of that desk over there, my other desk, is a full-length mirror.
Okay.
So I'll open my eyes and I'm looking right at my reflection and in my peripheral vision out the windows. And then I'll, you know, let's see how I can be with this. And then let go of all this Mitchness chatter and just see that reflection and then see what's beyond it as I'm still feeling all the sensations in the body and thoughts popping and, oh, the breath is still there. 20, 30 minutes. Great.
Beautiful. How often would you say, and I know I always try to remind people that a practice like that is, you know, think of it like a muscle. You don't, you're not just going to sit and do that. You know, you've been doing this for years, building this, building upon this practice. So how often do you get to do that, would you say?
I'm trying to relate to the should around it. I think it would be kind to myself to show up to it more than I have been lately. It's like a couple times a week. There was a period of years where, and the practice was a little different then, but you know, sitting practice was daily down in the basement in our old house, you know, on the cushion, on the bench, you know, 30 minutes every morning before I'd go into Manville or, you know, wherever. Sure. And, you know, I don't know that it needs to be daily because there's so much informal practice.
Right.
And yet, I don't know, it feels, it's important. You know, yeah. The word I keep using, it's a remembering.
Yeah, I like that. And so I think my favorite, if I had to pick one favorite of kind of the quick and more informal from the deck, would be the Rainbow Connection, I think you call it. And maybe it's just because I'm secretly like a big Muppets fan. I love Kermit. But it's the gaze around the room that you're in and try to find something of every color of the rainbow. I loved sharing that one, with especially with teachers, because they're usually in colorful spaces or they can do it out a window. Of course, but that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, you know, thank you. Yeah, that deck was a lot of fun to put together with Chris Willard, and which you should have him on at some point.
Yeah, we don't necessarily want to, you know, shame him on the recording, but he has been invited, and I think he will be a guest coming up.
yeah, good. You know, he and I had a lot of fun. We co-published a bunch of things. We just had our I'm gonna blank on the title. It just came out last month. Train Your Mind Like a Ninja.
The Ninja Deck. Yeah, I was. I have it. I bought it.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
It's great.
Yeah, I did that with him, and then Koei Kuwahara Sensei, who's a Aikido and Ayado, which is, you know, samurai sword master. He lives in Watertown, and that was really. It's been fun working with Chris putting that together, but that Growing Mindful deck was our first one. We self-published it initially. No one would take us seriously. There were no mindfulness card decks.
Oh my God, they're so helpful. And especially like when I present, a lot of times it's to teachers and I'm helping teachers. And I always tell them, you know, do it though with the students. Like, it's for your own like nervous system also to calm down and regulate. And they love the other ones I share. Are the what went well, because we tend to focus on the opposite of that. Right. So I always share that one. Oh, I do the stop method, the stop what you're doing, take a breath, observe your inner and outer worlds, and then proceed. And the last one I share is I don't know what you call it. I'm blanking on the header, but basically you take a big in breath with your open your arms wide, like you're going to give the whole world a hug.
Yeah.
And then on the exhale, you actually give yourself a hug. So those are my four favorite, but there's, I don't know, what is there, 52 in the deck? There's a lot there.
52. Yeah. No, thank you. It was a lot of fun to put those together. And the thing I would say, like, for teachers and parents, have the, instead of like, we're going to do this mindfulness stuff now, which they get a lot in schools these days, right? And like, oh God, here they go with the mindfulness stuff again. You know, have kids like pick out ones that, you know, look at all interesting to them, and then they can share it. They can teach their parent. They can teach other, you know, they can do like a little show and tell, or they can create their own practice riffing off of what's in the cards, you know. You want that kind of organic kind of engagement vibe. And then, you know, the thing that's going to get kids learning mindfulness is that kind of, you know, kind of organic jazz vibe. And then if the adult is being mindful, you know, they are doing it themselves. That's what teaches it best.
Yeah. No, I haven't really had a chance. The ninja deck looks excellent. I haven't really had a chance to dive into that one yet and start pulling and including them in my workshops, but I will for sure. I think it's important. And that one looks a lot of fun and very, very appealing to kids. Like, I could see just the art style.
Beautiful.
And, you know, who doesn't want to be a ninja? I mean, that's awesome. So
I aim for it every day.
You and Bruce Lee over there in the corner, the heavy bag. Awesome. So I want to make sure we'll be sure to include any links to things we've talked about, you know, in the episode notes, as well as your information. But if you want to share with us, Mitch, where folks can find you and learn more and engage with you, for our listeners.
Yeah. If people are at all resonating with the stuff I'm saying, you know, the things that you've talked about are out. You can learn about it on my website, you know, drmitchablett.com. Yeah, the other thing I'll say really quick, I've got a really cool program I'm excited about that I'm going to be launching here going into the holidays. It's, I'm calling it Transforming the Difficult Conversation.
Ooh.
And it's all about how to be able to show up to the tough conversations we all face with more presence and what I call courageous audacity.
Nice. Cool.
So that'll be, you know, people can sign up on my email list and find out about it.
Perfect. Well, we'll make sure all of that is included in the episode notes. And yeah, I know you are on pretty active on social media, on Twitter, and I know you're starting out more on using Instagram more.
Oh, I'm starting. I got like 50 followers.
Hey, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, remember, I just turned 50 on my Instagram. Okay, I guess I got to do that too.
Yeah, it's okay. But so folks can always engage with you on either one of those platforms as well. And we'll make sure your handles are in the episode notes. So thank you so much, Mitch, for joining us today. It was great to chat with you and learn more about the exciting work you're doing and your latest book.
Thank you. And congrats on your podcast and all you're doing.
Thank you so much. That was great. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Remember, self-care does not have to be cray-cray, and if it's riddled with shoulds for you, see if you can shift that thinking. I love how Mitch explained how he made that shift. And remember, self-care is not extreme or punishment. I think back to my days before my eating disorder recovery and how extreme I was with my exercise routine and my food restriction. That may have looked like self-care from the outside, especially since my body never fit the stereotypical look of someone with an eating disorder. But trust me, it was far from self-care. And hydration is so important. As I mentioned recently that I realized I was dehydrated despite my best efforts. At my acupuncturist's suggestion, I started adding coconut water to my routine. Now, I don't enjoy just plain coconut water. I don't like the texture or the taste. So what I've been doing is making mocktails. And I mix the coconut water, pure and unsweetened, with pineapple juice and ice, pour it into a fun glass, and add a splash of cranberry juice. Not only does it look very pretty, but it's also good for you. I have to say, I feel so much better when I'm properly hydrating. Give it a shot. And I love the idea of prizing over praising in Mitch's latest work. This is an important shift in how we work with children and how we parent. Of course, check out Mitch's book to learn more and his accompanying podcast. And I love the reminder for educators and parents in giving children the power of choice in picking their mindfulness practices, among other things, instead of it just being another thing that adults are making them do. Autonomy and voice are very important and can go a long way. Thanks for listening to this episode. We're thrilled to be back for season two. Remember to subscribe and rate this podcast on your preferred player. The ratings help us grow and share the message of self-care. If you have comments, suggestions, or questions, please reach out directly by emailing podcast@drmcselfcare.com. That's drmcselfcare.com. And come join the cast party at Dr. MC's Self Care Cabaret on Facebook and Instagram at DRMC Self Care or on my website, drmcselfcare.com. Be sure to like, subscribe, and love me across all my social media platforms for the most up-to-date information on self-care. Thanks, do well, and be good.